For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Hello, and welcome to the Over and Back Classic NBA Podcast. I am Jason, and with me, as usual, is Rich. Hello, Rich.
Hey, what's going on, Jason?
Oh, you know, just unfortunately, we have some sad news in the NBA world. Sam Jones, the Celtics legend, has passed away at age 88. One of the greats, one of the great players in that Celtics dynasty, 10 championship rings during his career, second only to Bill Russell. Just, amazing player, really, really interesting guy. Definitely a sad loss for the NBA world.
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah. A guy that, kind of felt eternal in a lot of ways. Like you always know that, like, we're coming up on a lot of these guys, getting into their later ages, the top tier Celtics guys, the MVPs. We've always talked about how there's only, two MVPs that have ever passed away. It's going to unfortunately start happening a lot more in the coming years. And for some reason, Sam Jones just felt like a guy, I don't know why, it just felt like he wasn't going to die anytime soon. It felt like it seemed like relatively healthy. And then I remember about, I want to say 6 or 7 months ago, reading an article that said that he was, starting to, really deteriorate a little bit. He stopped playing golf, started to kind of slow down in his life. And that was when I was like, oh man, that stinks. Yeah. Cause you heard that, like, he was still into, his mid 80s, still doing like celebrity golf tournaments and still, sure, out and about and with it and solid. And that's all you can really ask for, is being in your mid 80s and still be able to do, the things you love. And I remember reading that article about, I want to say it was about 6 or 7 months ago, that said, he had to give up golf and he had started to slow down a little bit. And it was like, oh no, yeah, man. But you know what? Hey, led a pretty awesome life, all things considered. We can all hope to lead a Sam Jones life if we can. So.
Yeah, we just need to put Bill Russell in a protective bubble, at all times.
I know, can't lose Bill. We really can't. Yeah, I don't know what we're going to do.
That's going to be hard.
I don't know what we're going to do. That's essentially who I was alluding to there, of like, we can't lose Bill. We can't. And he seems fine, but like, when you get to that age, it's like,
unfortunately, anything can happen. Yeah, the Celtics in particular have lost so many guys recently. I mean, obviously Heinsohn and Casey Jones, within the last year or so, and Havlicek, just a couple, 2-3 years ago, I think. So, a lot of really important guys from those years, unfortunately, passing on. But yeah, we've got some great, some interesting stories to talk about with Sam Jones, and talk about some of his accomplishments. We picked 10 games out of his career that kind of tell the story of his career. So it should be some fun stuff to dive into.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and this is a guy who, I think, if you listen to this podcast, or you've ever listened to the Over and Back podcast, we are Sam Jones respecters, because there's a lot of people that probably don't realize how important that guy was to the Celtics, and don't realize that he wasn't just one of the Joneses. You know what I mean? Like, KC's great. KC is really, really good. Sam is a little more important than Casey Jones was to a lot of those teams, and arguably, like, and we're gonna try to do a good job, or we will try to do a job of, I should say, over the next hour or so. To let you know just how important he was to those Celtics teams, and just how important he was to those teams winning those titles. Not just a guy who was along for the ride with Bill Russell, like a guy who very much so played huge, huge roles in them winning those titles.
Yeah, and the Celtics were obviously a true team. I mean, Russell was the most important player by far. That's very clear. And there were a lot of guys who contributed over, that 13-year span of that dynasty. Sam Jones was there pretty much the whole way. And he was known as the Celtic who would take the big shot when yep. needed. You know, he had so many big shots in the postseason. He, you know, earned the name Mr. Clutch, which somebody took from him, which is weird. You know, the guy who's best known for his team's losing all
big games. I was going to say, well, unfortunately,
Mr. Clutch.
But, yeah, I don't know how that. I have a note about that later because
right.
we're going to talk about Sam Jones and the sure. Celtics beating Mr. Clutch and the Lakers like every time.
All right. Played well, them, so. I'll save my rant for that point, but
yeah. You know, we'll do that,
Mr. Clutch. But anyway, and if you look at his career numbers, you know, they're good, but not necessarily, you know, spectacular. You know, he's averaged about 17, you know, points per game throughout his career. You know, the counting stats, you know, 4.9 rebounds, 2.5 assists, you know, almost a 19 PER, you know, again, really solid career, you know, a Hall of Fame career, but not necessarily, you know, a guy you would look at immediately and say, oh yeah, he was an upper tier player, you know, one of the 50 or 75 or whatever greatest of all time. But yeah, you look at really how he contributed and especially, you know, during those big game situations, you know, really, you can see how essentially important he was to those teams, you know, pretty much throughout the entire time. So just, yeah, some overall accomplishments. Five-time All-Star, three times All-NBA on the second team. You know, he's behind West and Oscar Robertson and, you know, Bob Cousy and Bill Sharman, you know, on his own team, as much in terms of being those All-NBA accomplishments. But, you know, got a few in the mid-60s. He was on the 25th, 50th, and 75th anniversary team. That 25th anniversary team, being on that team, that was a – you know, he was definitely a bit of a slight surprise in terms, because that's, you know, the greatest players of the first 25 years. And a lot of he kind of went ahead of some of the older players who had maybe more accomplishments, but that kind of shows how respected he was. That happened, you know, right after he retired, kind of showed, you know, how respected he was at the time of his retirement. And then sort of, you know, as memories went on, kind of got, you know, forgotten a little bit in the mist, despite, you know, certainly the 60s Celtics, there's not any lack of, you know, people who really, you know, emphasize those teams, but somehow, you know, kind of became underrated despite that.
Yeah. Yeah. Being on that 25th team, I think is just huge, huge accomplishment. Cause yeah, like you said, the guys that he's over, there's a lot of spectacular guys. There's a lot of guys with like really eye popping numbers and, you know, solid amounts of accomplishments, but yeah, for him to be on there immediately after he retires, it lets you know that, like, you know, now we sort of look at the 60s Celtics as like Bill Russell and then like this amazing team and this amazing collection of talent, where, you know, maybe then they were like, no, I mean, Sam Jones is a damn good player and a big reason why that team won. And yeah, like you're absolutely right that over the years we've turned them into this one blob of, you know, Bill Russell, Bob Cousy, John Havlicek, and then a bunch of these dudes who were just really, really good basketball players and all could, you know, work around those top stars or whatever. And it's like, let's give some respect to some of these guys, including Sam Jones, who I think being on that 25th team tells you at that time just how respected and how revered he was.
Right. It wanted 12 guys to be on that team. So that it's a small.
Yeah. Number, it's not obviously. A big team. Yeah. You know, it's not, there's not 76 guys like we had in 70.
Sure. Sure.
It's a small little team here. We're talking about the best of the best. And it's like they made a team. They made like one lineup. They didn't make like, you know, hey, let's list, you know, 50, 75 guys or whatever. It was literally 12 dudes. So.
Yeah. Well, and it just shows like how well they blended in together sometimes obscures how great they were individually.
Yes.
Yeah. And absolutely. So, yeah. And, Mike Lynch, a good friend, Mike Lynch, shared, that Sam Jones 25-2 all time in playoff series during his career, which is just like, you know, and honestly, the first loss came, you know, when he was a rookie. So really, outside of that, you know, 25-1, only losing to the 67 76ers. So, and there's a really good article on Basketball Scholar looking at kind of his, you know, kind of his clutch performance. And it brings up he was the scoring leader for the Celtics five times during the regular season, three times during the postseason. He averaged 27.1 points per game in nine career playoff game sevens. His playoff scoring average, 18.9, exceeded his regular season output, 17.7. But if you look at his playoff scoring average during his years as a starter from 1962 on, 22.6 points per game. So, and again, you know, the Celtics were a very balanced team. There were not a lot of, you know, no one averaged 30 points per game during during that era. You know, guys really barely even averaged 25 points per game. So they were really, you know, built on a lot of things. So for him to stand out in that way is pretty exceptional. He was 9-0 during his career in seventh games in playoff series. Again, averaged 27.1 points per game in those series. So that's just, you know,
yeah,
right there.
Oh,
you know,
the, yeah. And some of these are nuts. We had our good friend Curtis Harris, who tweeted this out. A couple he linked. We have a Overback NBA on Twitter. We, you know, asked people if they had some questions or wanted us to talk about anything with Sam Jones, and I replied with a tweet that he made a couple years ago about Sam Jones' stats in game sevens. 1959, 19.8 rebounds. 1960 finals, these are obviously all game sevens. 1960 finals, 18 points. 62 Eastern Division finals, 28.7 rebounds. 62 finals, 27.8 rebounds. 63 Eastern Division finals, 49 points and 7 rebounds. 65 Eastern Division finals, 37 points. 66 finals, 22 points, 5 rebounds. 68 Eastern Division Finals, 22 points, and the 1969 Finals, 24 points, 7 rebounds in Game 7. So no clunkers, you know what I mean? Like, single one of them was, a really good game. And then, like, yeah, obviously the first 2 years, he's kind of just, like, you know, 19, 18, whatever. And then, like, and that kind of follows his career, because by, like, 1962, he's, like, a bona fide, you know, top tier guy on the Celtics. Yeah, then you get 27 points, 28 points, 47, 37, 22, 22, 24. So, yeah, just a... The real Mr. Clutch. Sorry, Mr. West. Sorry, Logo. But that's some pretty big performances there in Game 7. So,
right. Absolutely. Yeah. And Bill Russell wrote in Second Wind, one of his autobiographies, is about Sam. His presence gave me comfort in key games. In the seventh game of a championship series, I'll take Sam over any player who's walked on a court. So that's saying a lot right there. And you know, he was known, you know, one thing was his bank shot. He was just, in fact,
the original Banksy,
right? You got the nickname
before it was
Banksy
cool.
From Johnny Most. Exactly. Yes. And yeah, the bank shot may not have been cool, but it was absolutely,
I thought it was cool.
Yeah. Right. Well, you and I think it's cool.
Yeah. Maybe most people do not. Most people
right.
do not.
No. But yeah, he, you know, he used the bank shot. You know, he had extremely high, field goal percentage, for the time. And yeah, he was known, you know, he had an explosive first step. He had great leaping ability, you know, could finish on the break. You know, Bob Cousy said, you know, after I was done with my magic, I wanted to put an assist next to my name, and Sam hardly ever missed. Just the idea that, like, you know, he wasn't going to pass it to a guy if he wasn't going to make it. And he trusted Sam to, you know, to make the shot, especially in the big moment. Also known as a bit of a trash talker. He would sometimes yell too late when he got a shot off just before a defender could block him. This famously led to an altercation with Wilt Chamberlain, who Jones just loved to mess with. Eventually, Wilt, you know, got to the point where he was extremely frustrated. He was chasing Sam down. He yelled, "I'm going to kill you if I catch you." Sam Jones runs into the – grabs an empty chair into the baseline, turns and faces Wilt. And then Chamberlain later said in the Terry Pluto book, Tall Tales, he was about ready to go up into the stands. He didn't want to fight. So I said, forget it. So, kind of a funny moment, but, yeah, when he retired, Jones held 11 Celtics records. He was the only player at the time in franchise history to score more than 50 points a game. We're going to get to that in a bit. And yeah, there's some other fun, a few other fun anecdotes about, Sam Jones' life that we found out.
Yeah. So, you know, his even getting into the NBA was a bit of a struggle for him to even get there. Even getting into college was a bit of a struggle for him to get there. Obviously playing, you know, in the American South at the time that he did, it not a whole lot of opportunities for a black basketball player in that region. So even to get to college was a lot of tough stuff. And we'll talk about that, too. You know, historically, black colleges and universities pretty much were the only ones that would allow black athletes to go in there. So he wasn't going to play at any big time schools. He wasn't going to play at UNC. He wasn't going to be able to play at all of these other places. So he played at North Carolina Central University. What is now called North Carolina Central University. And halfway through that, he enlists in the Army, stationed in New Mexico, and spends 2 years there, then returns to complete his degree, I should say, doesn't end up starting his NBA career until he was 24, which is actually pretty interesting because in that time period, the Lakers actually drafted and tried to claim Sam Jones. But since he was in the Army and he was going to go back to college, they had to let go of that claim. And then obviously That leads to this moment where Boston Celtics Red Auerbach, who was pretty good at scouting and pretty good at drafting, I would say. I think that's a bit of a hot take, but I think this man was quite good at selecting players for his professional basketball team.
Yeah,
so.
Especially early on. Yeah,
yes, 60. Yeah. Yeah,
he was not quite as good, but yeah, but he was good at the trade. So
it made he was. So he takes a scouting trip to North Carolina. They had just won the national championship, so he's looking at some UNC Tar Heels and Bones McKinney. They don't make him like Bones McKinney. I mean, nobody's called Bones McKinney anymore. I wish we had more Bones McKinneys.
Yeah.
Walking around, but no more Bones. No. Anyway, he played for Auerbach and he was coaching at Wake Forest, and he told Red Auerbach, you know, hey, go to Chapel Hill if you want. Go look at UNC if you want. But I'm telling you, the best player in the state is at North Carolina Central University. And Red's like, okay, whatever, yeah. So what happens is, you know, obviously Auerbach's there scouting North Carolina players. The Philadelphia Warriors select Lenny Rosenbluth from North Carolina.
Yeah. You don't get enough Lenny Rosenbluths.
You don't. Days. Yeah, there's not a lot of Rosenbluths in the NBA these days. Yeah. So they get him with the sixth pick in the in the 57 draft. So. Yeah. Auerbach says, rips up the draft board. Whatever. I wanted Rosenbluth. I'm not going to be able to get him. Whatever.
Yeah.
To like Sam Jones two picks later. Auerbach had never seen Jones play. He never went on that recruiting trip, but he said, you know what? Bones says he's good. I trust the guy. Rosenbluth plays 2 years in the NBA, averages 4.2 points per game. Sam Jones played more years in the NBA and averaged more points per game.
Yeah.
I would say just slightly more points per game and slightly more years in the NBA. 2 years for Rosenbluth. 10 rings for Sam Jones. So I would say not a bad pick by Red Auerbach and good on Bones McKinney for telling him to make it. So
not a bad decision at all. Yeah, and as you said, he didn't really – and Sam Jones really – all he really knew about the Celtics at that point was that they were world champions. He didn't really know that much about Bill Russell or Bob Cousy or there. He just was kind of like – and he was not really particularly happy about going to the Celtics because he figured, well, they're an established team. They're, they just won the championship. They're probably not going to have room for a rookie. I'm not going to have much opportunity there. He would rather have gone to the Lakers. In fact, he was even reluctant to go into the league. His wife had to convince him to actually try out for the team. He kind of thought he hadn't. But going a little bit back into his background, which you alluded to, he grew up in Laurinburg, North Carolina. He played high school ball in a small gym that was heated by stoves at each end of the court.
Seems dangerous.
I mean, this is life, of course, in the segregated South. And as you mentioned, he was recruited by historically black colleges, North Carolina, what is now North Carolina Central University. He had a great MBA career once he got started, but it was a late start. He didn't start until he was 24 years old because of his Army, stint and going back to college for his senior year. And but when he retired, he was only one of a dozen players in NBA history at that point who'd lasted until age 35. So, he managed to have a pretty long career despite starting late. We've talked about this in previous episodes, but he helped lead a revolt of black Celtics players who refused to play an exhibition game after, he and Satch Sanders had been denied restaurant service in a hotel that the hotel had grudgingly allowed him to sleep there, but no restaurant service. So he and Russell and Satch Sanders and the other black players were like, "Yep, we're not going to do this." It was supported by Red Auerbach. And
I was reading about that story earlier today, and there was one part where they mentioned that Red was able to talk to the hotel manager, and the hotel manager said, "Okay, yes, they can eat there. They can eat there." And Red says, "Okay, you guys can eat there." And I think it was Sam Jones that said, "No, I don't care because tomorrow they're not going to let black guys eat there. So, screw these guys. We're out of here." They listen to you because you beg them and you're Red Auerbach. But tomorrow it's right back to the old story, right back to the old games that they were doing before. So, screw this. We're out. And hey, to Red's credit and everyone's credit, they said, "Screw it. We're done." And they left.
Yeah, absolutely. And that took a lot of, courage by, it took a lot of courage by Sam Jones and the other guys to, stick to the principles to do that, took a lot of courage to, stand up in the face of that injustice. And, it was a big moment. So, after his career, he coached at Federal City College in downtown Washington, returned to North Carolina Central, did some coaching there, worked at DC Public Schools for 5 years, worked at Nike for 10 years, was a longtime substitute teacher in the Maryland area for a long time before I think he moved to Florida later in life, and also did serve briefly in the NBA as an assistant for the New Orleans Jazz in 1975, but did not I think he kind of grew apart from the NBA later on in his career. Of course, he still was part of the Celtics family, but wasn't following the NBA closely later on in his career. And he did make the Hall of Fame, although not until 1984, which we're gonna yeah. get into.
Into that for sure,
right? Because I'm just like, okay, what are they thinking here?
All right, guys, we'll get right back to the Over and Back Classic NBA podcast in a moment. I do have to let you know about a brand new podcast from the Players Tribune. They just launched it. It's their first ever mental health podcast. It's called Blindsided. It's hosted by former NHL goalie Corey Hirsch and psychiatrist Dr. Diane McIntosh. The show will share the moments for a variety of athletes when everything changed for them and mental health became the most important focus of their lives. Guests this season include, relevant to you guys, Kevin Love, Kurt Warner, and many, many others. Again, it's hosted by former NHL goalie Corey Hirsch and psychiatrist Dr. Diane McIntosh. Blindsided dives in deeper, it gets clinical, and allows listeners to leave with an understanding of the different varieties of mental health challenges that people face, why they appear, and how athletes in particular face them down. Blindsided is a sports podcast, not only for people who follow sports, but also for those who don't. Again, the podcast is called Blindsided. It is hosted by the Players Tribune, first ever mental health podcast, hosted by Corey Hirsch and Dr. Diane McIntosh. Listen to it wherever podcasts are listened to.
We're going to break down 10 games that we feel define Sam Jones's career.
Yeah, let's do that. So we'll have some here that are just, important games, big time games, statistically important games, just a collection of 10 games that we think very quickly define Sam Jones's career. The first one I'm going to do here is October 25th, 1958. This is the first 20-point game of Sam Jones's career. And that kind of alludes to something you talked about earlier, that Sam Jones was not an immediate success. And he was behind, obviously Bob Cousy and Bill Sharman. So it's tough to get minutes when you're a rookie and Bob Cousy and Bill Sharman are in front of you. He wasn't, like you said, it wasn't even certain that he was going to join the Celtics. He was fine going into teaching. His wife Gladys says, no, try it out. And yeah, his rookie year, he was fine. Like, he was okay. But, he failed to score in double figures 49 times his rookie year. He was pretty much a non-factor for the 58 Celtics. He ends the season averaging just 4.6 points per game. Not far off from our boy Lonnie Rosenbluth or whatever there. Yeah. But
Rosenbluth. Yeah, exactly.
Right. Yeah. And then only 10.6 minutes per game as well. So, yeah, it was really tough. And the quote here says, I'm a team player and I was trying to find my role. I didn't like starting at first. I liked coming off the bench. The reason was that I could come in fresh and run and shoot and get out on the fast break. I had an advantage. When I started, I didn't have that advantage. So he tried to look at the most of it of coming off the bench that first year, really not playing very much. But this game, the reason why I mentioned this game, this October 25th, 1958, is this, to me, was the next year. This is the beginning of his sophomore year. And this really signifies, to me, his ascension on the team. Because, yeah, they lost this game. That's irrelevant. They lost this game. But what was important, though, is that he got his first 20-point game ever. And he was off to the races. Because this next sophomore year, he raises his scoring average up to 10.7 points per game. And more importantly, he doubles his minutes per game year over year to 20.6. And I think what's most important about this 20-point game is it let the Celtics know, hey, now we can go back to winning titles. Because they had lost the year prior that they don't play Sam Jones enough. And then they lose to the St. Louis Hawks. But this year they say, let's play this guy a little bit more. And they end up winning the championship. Jones had scored 20 plus points 5 more times that season, plus one time in the postseason to help the Celtics beat, drum roll please, the Lakers to win the title. Jones, he would average just under 10 points per game in the finals. And this would probably be the last finals or last playoffs where he doesn't play like an integral role in the Celtics. But at least to me, it signified like the beginning of them really, really trusting this guy and realizing what they had in Sam Jones, which leads me to a few seasons later, March 12th, 1961, the first 40-point game of Sam Jones's career. Only a second 30-plus point game in his career. We talked about the other one. And then he did that in his fourth season. And then he started getting bigger minutes at this point. And he would take over as a full-time starter in 1962. So he said it took a little while. And that's, again, like we say, that's probably why he didn't really want to go to the Celtics, is he's looking at that and going, shit. He could say, I didn't really want to start. I didn't want to do this. But, like, you could see how, as a rookie, like, he could have easily, very, very easily, Boston could have just said, hey, we don't really need this guy, and cut him after that first year. I mean, he wasn't that important to the Celtics that first season, but to their credit, they stuck with him, and he ends up becoming a full-time starter by 1962. But this is his first 40-point game. He'd score 40-plus points 8 more times in his career, 4 of those in playoff games as well. And then from 1961 to 1969, he'd averaged 20.2 points per game, 5 rebounds per game, 2.9 assists per game, and that includes his mid-30s as well. So this is a guy who was pretty much good until the final days of his career, which we'll talk about again. We'll talk about his final game where he still is putting up big numbers and still going out there and beating the Lakers. But yeah, first 40-point game for him in March 12th, 1961.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, if this had been like, if he had just been a few years later, you know, he joins the league, you know, as they start expanding, yeah, there's no way he's going to last with the Celtics. I mean, they're going to at some point have to make a decision to like cut him in the expansion draft. If it happens like in the first or second season of his career, he's probably not going to be able to stick around there. He would have ended up on another team or whatever. And obviously, you know, in an era where there's free agency or something, that would have been a really hard team. Yeah, I mean, basically, yeah, there's no way you would be able to keep Casey Jones and Sam Jones behind Bill Sharman and Bob Cousy for 4 years. There's just no way that would have, you know, there's no way that would have been able to happen. So, yeah. And in some ways, yeah, maybe again, Sam Jones on another team being like the guy, maybe he's seen somewhere along, you know, somewhere close to where, you know, you would see Jerry West or somebody like that. But obviously, you know, the situation with the Celtics worked out pretty well for him too.
So, I would say, yeah, I would say yeah. It did okay.
Yes. So 1962 Eastern Division Finals game 7, we've got a thriller here against the against the Philadelphia Warriors, April 5th, 1962. The Celtics win this game thanks to Mr. Clutch, described in a Boston Globe article as Silent Sam Jones, dispelling once and for all the characteristic of timidity in the clutch. Silent Sam Jones came through with a 15-foot jump shot with 2 seconds remaining to give the Celtics a 109-107 victory. This was in Boston, and of course, gave the Lakers the right to, the Celtics the right to face the Lakers in the 1962 Finals. Bill Russell later called this the toughest series I ever had to play in. You know, the 62 Warriors, they've got Will Chamberlain, of course. They've got Thomas Sherry. They've got Guy Rogers, Paul Arizin, Tom Gola, Al Addles. You know, tough team there, the Warriors. But yeah, the Celtics pull it out again, keep that legendary magic. And Sam Jones in this game, plus in addition to hitting the game winner, has 28 points, 7 rebounds, showing those game 7 bona fides. And he also did pretty well in game 5 of this series as well. 23 points, 18 rebounds, 7 assists. So he's just absolutely essential. And again, as we said, this is the Celtics' first season of that dynasty without Bill Sharman. Sam Jones now entrenched as a starter, mm-hmm. you know, now playing full starters minutes, and, you know, absolutely becoming, you know, an essential ingredient for the rest of that Celtics dynasty.
Absolutely. Yeah. No fall off. No, we lose an all time great, a Hall of Famer. Right. And yeah, we just insert another guy who is ascending into an all time great Hall of Famer right there. So, yeah, not nice embarrassment of riches there for the Celtics. So good for them.
Yeah, absolutely. So and then, yeah, we move on to still 1962, the NBA Finals game 6. And the Celtics, they were in a tough position here. They were down 3-2 to the Lakers. Elgin Baylor had just scored 61 points in game 5 in Boston. But they're back to L.A., and then Sam Jones comes through huge, 35 points, 7 rebounds, 3 assists, helping the Celtics win 119-105, tying the series at 3-3, sending it to Game 7 in Boston. And, you know, Jones does pretty good in Game 7, too. Of course, Bill Russell has 30 points and 40 rebounds in the game. It's a 110-107 overtime victory for Boston. Jones starts really slow in the first half. He only has 2 points. He's 1-for-10 from the field. But in the second half and overtime, 25 points, scores 5 of the Celtics' 10 points in overtime, ends up with 35 points. Total just absolutely delivers huge in that game, helping the Celtics win that game. Excuse me, I had the box score. I had the the total's wrong for that game. He ended up with 27 points in that game, in game seven of that series, 8 rebounds, 3 assists. And but still, the message is clear. He absolutely big again in a game seven.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's an all time great series as well. That 1962 finals and that game seven, too. I mean, that is just juggernaut versus juggernaut. Yeah. Bill Russell, as you said, 30 points, 40 rebounds. Sam Jones, 27 points, 25 in the second half. Jerry West puts 35 up. Elgin Baylor, 41 and 22 rebounds. Right. And they still lose. It's just like, damn it. Come on.
Howie Joliffe for the Lakers gets 2 rebounds in 9 minutes. You know?
Yeah. It was a Ray Felix. He scores 2 points.
Yeah.
It's 2 free throws. 2 clutch free throws.
But
no, just juggernauts. I mean, this is an awesome series. This is an all-time great series. And there's going to be a lot of these. That's one of the benefits to the Celtics is they were awesome, but they weren't awesome enough that, like, every game and every series goes like 6 or 7 games and it leads to these awesome moments. Like, I'm glad, because it'd be kind of boring if they just like swept everybody. It's not like the Durant, you know, Curry Warriors that are just like, these are boring. Come on. These guys are, it's like, you know, they're great and they're always going to win these titles, but they're always going to make it really, really interesting, which I always appreciated. So
that is nice. Yes. Agreed. So we've got the 1963 Eastern Division Finals, another game seven. Sam Jones dueling with Oscar Robertson. Sam Jones wins that duel, 47 points, 7 rebounds. Oscar Robertson with 43 points. And the Celtics are able to pull out a tough series against the Cincinnati Royals. This is probably the Royals' best chance at dethroning the Celtics. But unfortunately for the Royals, they fall short. Jones' 47 points were the most scored in a game seven in NBA playoff history, although Dominic Wilkins did tie that in 88. And then Kevin Durant finally broke the record last season, 2021, in the Eastern Conference semis against the Bucks, although Durant did need overtime to break that record. So Sam does, So
I don't know, KD. Yeah. Overtime? I don't know.
Right. Yeah. If only he just stepped back, one inch and didn't have his foot on the line.
Oh, right. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Yeah. He ruined so many things. He ruined the Nets' potential title. He ruined this record. Yeah. All right.
How dare he? Yeah. Way to go.
Toenail. If only his toe was a little shorter. So.
Right. Yeah. In the 63 finals, he continues to deliver 24.7 points on 45% shooting, 7.3 rebounds, 3.2 assists. And that for that postseason overall, 23.8 points, 83% shooting, 54 true shooting, 6.2 rebounds, 2.5 assists. Just some huge numbers during those early postseasons, really delivering big as the top scorer for his team. And they really need scoring at this point. I mean, Tom Heinsohn and Bob Cousy, were both kind of getting up there. Those were kind of the two guys they, were kind of trusting to, do most of the scoring in these situations, or at least, kind of get the ball and try to make something happen. Although the Celtics were not really a half court team. Generally, they were going to be, get the rebound, get the fast break, just kind of get somebody the ball. They didn't have a lot of set plays, but still, the guys they were expecting to shoulder most of the load in scoring were either gone or were getting older. And Sam Jones absolutely was, the key guy during this period, while, Havlicek was developing, and while they would, kind of get some of the guys that, they would get later, like, your Don Nelsons and such that, to kind of get that scoring load. But he was absolutely, especially essential during this period.
Yeah. This is an interesting kind of a transition period for the Celtics where, like you said, you're getting Russell, who's still great, but he's starting to kind of take on less of a scoring load and just kind of be the, hey, I'm going to get rebounds and get it to you guys and you guys do everything. Bob Cousy really getting up there in age and almost, near the end of his career. Tom Heinsohn, as you said, getting up there. And you can look at the roster and go, well, they have John Havlicek. But it's like, similar to Sam Jones, when they bring Havlicek in there, there's a lot of dudes that he's in front of and he's not quite ready yet. He's not quite the John Havlicek that we know from the late 60s, early 70s or whatever. So he's kind of still developing and getting there. So Sam Jones is an essential piece of this kind of transition period, and that it speaks to Sam Jones and his impact as well, that, like you said, he played a huge, huge role in kind of the quote unquote old Celtics, and then also will play a huge role in the new Celtics while also shouldering the load in between that period, between time between those two great teams. So it's just an essential part of this in between period for the Celtics.
Right. And yeah, and obviously, as you know, Bill Russell was never going to be expected to be the guy.
Oh, God, no. No.
Take the last shot and create offense. You know, that wasn't what he was. I mean, he was one of the greatest players in NBA history, despite all that, for everything else. But that was not going to be his forte. And Sam Jones was one of the guys who that was his forte. And that's, you know, and that was what he contributed to, you know, those great teams. And another example of that 1965 Eastern Division Finals Game 7. This is Havlicek steals the ball. Well, Havlicek did steal the ball, but Sam Jones scored 37 points to lead all scorers in this game, the Celtics against the Philadelphia 76ers, another Game 7. And then, you know, this entire postseason, Jones averages 28.6 points per game, which is his career playoff high, 4.6 rebounds, 2.5 assists. Averaged 29.1 points per game during the series. According to the Sarasota Herald Tribune, it was a repeat starring role for Sam Jones. 3 years ago, Archer shot over Chamberlain's fingertips to beat the Philadelphia Warriors with 2 seconds left. Of course, his game winner that we already talked about. And in the finals, Jones averaged team high 27.8 points per game. 4.8 rebounds, 2.6 assists. These numbers all coming from the Basketball Scholar article that we alluded to earlier, which has, you know, some great numbers and items that you're talking about Sam Jones's delivery in the clutch.
Absolutely.
All right. What do we got next?
All right. 51 points for Sam Jones here, October 29th, 1965. This is the first time in his career that he is going to score 50 points, not the last, though. And in a non-Wilt world, 50 points is still pretty tough to get. Yes, Wilt Chamberlain did it way too many times to list. But other than non-Wilt, if we take Wilt out of it, 50-point games before Sam Jones did it, Elgin Baylor, Joel Foulkes, Jerry West, George Mikan, Richie Guerin, Cliff Hagan, Bob Pettit, Oscar Robertson, Jack Twyman, Hal Greer, Ray LaRusso, Dolph Shays, George Yardley. That's it. That's the entire list. And that's like the who's who of top tier scorers in NBA history up to this point, up until 1965. Non-Wilt division, obviously.
And Ray LaRusso. But,
And Ray LaRusso's there too.
Right.
You know, everyone has a good, sometimes guys just have a good night. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Just
gonna,
do it. But so Jones gets 50. But I thought what was more interesting is where the Celtics were at this time. So Boston had cruised to an NBA title the year prior, defeating, drum roll please, the Lakers in five games. But as the 64-65 season started, though, the Celtics are struggling a little bit. Yes, they're 2-3, and most teams, that's not struggling. But for the Celtics, that's kind of struggling. The year prior, they hadn't had their second loss until like mid-November. So this is a team that at this time is meant to be winning every title, meant to be the top tier team. And at this point, they're scudding, you know, and they lose to the Pistons in this game. He scored 51 and they lose to the Pistons. But yeah, he does this on 21-35 shooting, a perfect 9-9 from the floor. Boston lost to the Pistons, as I said. But Detroit at this time, they were a 31 win team the year prior. The fortunes for both teams would change pretty drastically after this game as well. Boston, I think, gets back on track here. They would go 12-2 over their next 14 games en route to winning 45 games and another title, beating, Jason, one guess of who they beat in seven games in the NBA Finals.
Charlotte Bobcats.
Close.
Yeah,
It was the Lakers again. Yeah, it was,
okay.
Unfortunately, it was Mr. Clutch and the Lakers yet again. So Sam Jones single-handedly turns around this Boston season and single-handedly destroys the up-and-coming Detroit Pistons because they would lose 11 in the next 12 games and end the season with only 22 wins. So,
Yeah, maybe you don't make your, your 24-year-old best player the coach as well. Maybe that's
not a good idea. I forget we should have mentioned there that they were coached by Dave DeBuscher, who was like 10 years younger than most of the other guys on the team.
Right.
So, yeah. I'm not against it, but didn't seem to work very well at all in any way, shape, or form whatsoever.
Right. So Sam Jones scores 51 for the first time. Well, he did it again in the postseason, 1967 Eastern Division semis, Game 4. It's the deciding game. It's the Celtics taking on the New York Knicks. The first time the Knicks had made the playoffs since 1959. So it's been a long time. You got Willis Reed. You got Walt Bellamy. You got Cassie Russell. You got Dick Van Arsdale. Pretty good, solid team. You know, But yeah, even though the Boston Celtics, you know, they're aging a bit here. This, I believe, 67 was the first year they didn't actually win their division. They lose it to the Sixers.
Bums.
yeah, but yeah, they still deliver in the playoffs. Sam Jones, 51 points, 19 of 30 from the field.
Man,
13 of 17 from the line. Also had 4 rebounds. He also had a 38-point game during this series as well. So, you know, helping the Celtics out, delivering that big scoring punch. They're gonna make the next round, where the dynasty's finally going to, you know, the 8 titles in a row finally going to end this year against the 76ers. But, you know, Sam keeps them alive for a little while, and then is going to deliver big in the last couple seasons as well for those final 2 Celtics titles.
Absolutely. Yeah. Do you want to, I can do this 1969 NBA Finals Game 4, another classic NBA Finals matchup between the Celtics and the Lakers. Los Angeles 69 Finals, they win the first 2 games, 120-118, and then 118-112. Jerry West in game 1, he's like, I'm sick of this shit. I'm winning this. 53 points and 10 assists in game 1, 41 points in game 2. He's mad as hell and he's not going to take it anymore. No. But Boston comes back 111-105 to win the third game. And they trail the fourth game 88-87 with 7 seconds left. Boston looking at going down 3-1. Nah, Jones hits a game winner to give Boston a 1-point win to tie the series at 2-2. Jones did call a shot at the beginning of the year as well, saying that he is done at year's end. This is going to be his last NBA season. You know, as we mentioned here, that, you know, they're going to win by 1. L.A., they have a 1-point lead with 7 seconds left, 88-87. Elgin Baylor steps out of bounds, uncharacteristic mistake from Elgin Baylor there, gives Boston one more chance. Boston runs a play called Ohio. It's a staggered triple screen for Jones, who nails the shot at the buzzer, evens the series at 2 games apiece. He has 16 points, 4 rebounds, and 4 assists in the game. Keeps the Celtics alive, which eases us perfectly into the NBA Finals. Game 7, 1969, a storybook ending to Sam Jones' career. It's Game 7. It's the NBA Finals. The Celtics win. He wins a ring. They beat, Jason, who do they beat?
They beat.
You got this. You can do this. I promise. Yeah. You can do it. They used to be in Minnesota, but now they're in another town.
Oh, okay. Not the Timberwolves then.
It's not the North Stars. It's not the North Dallas Stars. This is basketball we're talking about here.
Yeah. Okay, basketball. Yeah, professional basketball. Okay. All right. I got this. It's the Pittsburgh Pipers.
Damn.
No?
No, the Lakers. It was the Lakers again. Oh, yeah, it was the Lakers again, believe it or not. Yeah, this is the famous game where Lakers owner Jack Kent Cooke was well prepared for a Lakers championship. He fills the arena with balloons that say World Champion Lakers. Every seat in the arena has a flyer that says, quote, when, not if, the Lakers win the title. Balloons will be released from the rafters. The USC marching band will play Happy Days Are Here Again. And broadcaster Chick Hearn will interview Elgin Baylor, Jerry West, and Wilt Chamberlain in that order. That leads us to the famous Bill Russell quote, an all-time great quote that says, those fucking balloons are staying up there, which is just, oh man. I would love to get, I might just get a poster that just says that. That's just an all-time great. I don't even like the Celtics. You know what I mean? Like,
that's a great inspirational. Yeah,
so good.
Yeah, that's better than the cat, you know, hang in there.
Exactly. Those fucking balloons are staying up there. It's just the best. Yeah. So, Celtics blow the doors off the Lakers at the beginning. They go up big early. This leads to the famous benching of Wilt Chamberlain, who goes out with an injury. Then he says he's ready to come back. Lakers coach Van Brennikoff says, "Nah, we're good. We don't need you anymore. We're doing just fine without you." Lakers do make a miraculous comeback here. Get it pretty close. Don Nelson hits a big shot, a very famous shot that bounces like literally 15 feet up, and it hits the rim, bounces like 95 feet into the air, hits the top of the air, hits those balloons. It hits the balloons and then comes right back down. If he didn't have the balloons in there, it would have just hit the rafters and it would have been a dead ball. But nope, he had to put a bunch of balloons up there. So the Don Nelson shot hits the balloons, comes right down. Don Nelson could take that shot 10,000 more times in his life, and I don't think it's going to go in the way it went in. I mean, it's just, there's clips of it too, and it's just ridiculous. It just shoots right in the air, and you're like, well, that's never going in. That just wham, right down. Right. Just makes it. It's awesome. Yeah. And then the Lakers had lost once again. Jones finishes his career on top. Great performance in a huge spot, scoring 24 points on 10 of 16 shooting, 7 rebounds. An amazing way to go. Unfortunately, as was customary throughout his career, Jones says, hey, I'm retiring. I'm done. That's it for me. You know who also retires that year? Bill Russell. And turns out more people cared about Bill Russell retiring than they cared about Sam Jones retiring. So again, just a perfect, perfect way to cap off the Sam Jones career. Game 7, NBA Finals, his Celtics win the title, the Lakers lose, and then he's overshadowed immediately by another one of his teammates. So,
yeah, I think he still accepted the way it happens.
Oh, no, no, yeah. He will definitely be fine with having two full handfuls of rings. Getting that 10th ring is pretty exactly. impressive. So
absolutely, yeah. So I want to go back to this Hall of Fame thing. So he's not in – he retires end of the 69 season, obviously, as we said. His first year he's eligible is 1975. So I wanted to get into – we're just gonna talk about guys who were NBA related Hall of Fame.
Sure, no real point to this at all. You're just naming guys.
I'm not even gonna get into like people from college basketball or other things. We'll just talk about the NBA guys because, 1975, Bill Russell goes in. Now Bill Russell basically goes in under protest. He doesn't want anything to do with the Hall of Fame. He says, "Hey, this is a racist institution. Don't induct me. I'm not into this." But they induct him. Well, they at least put him in, the probably a little weird at the ceremony, but they do put him in. But they don't put in Sam Jones. 76, they put in Tom Gola and Bill Sharman, long waits for both guys. I would not put in Tom Gola before Sam Jones. Bill Sharman, you could kind of make a case for it. I mean, he was one of the, one of the top two or three shooting guards of his time. So, and of course part of that Celtics dynasty, although not as big a part of his Jones was. So 77, Elgin Baylor. Sure. Elgin Baylor. That makes sense. 78. They decide, hey, we're going to throw in some guys, Paul Arizin, Joe Folks, Cliff Hagan, Jim Pollard. Out of those four guys, I would put Arizin in before Sam Jones, but the rest of those guys, probably not. What do you think?
I would agree. Yeah, I think that's fair. Arizin, I have no huge argument with Folks, Hagan, and especially Jim Pollard. I'm sorry. Jones got going before those guys.
Now, Folks, he died in 76, so this is posthumous. But, both of those guys have been waiting a long time. Arizin's really been waiting a long time. So I get that. But
remember when the Basketball Hall of Fame used to, really take their time with guys? And now it's you can't even believe there's, dudes who go in now. You're like, I didn't even realize he was retired for the amount of years that was required.
Right,
we got to get Chris Bosh in. It's been too long. It's like, the guy's just retired, 2 years ago. calm down a little bit. You know what I mean? It's like, yep. Then this is like, well, Joe Folks died. I guess we can finally put him in now. It's like the Baseball Hall of Fame. In some way, I kind of appreciate it because I enjoy, a Hall of Fame really, truly feeling like it's the best of the best. But it's pretty wild given where the Basketball Hall of Fame is gone these days. We're just 45 guys going every single year now. So.
It's just so weirdly inconsistent. That's the thing.
We got to get Mitch Richmond in. It's like, do we though? I mean, I like Mitch, but I don't know that we need Mitch Richmond in the Basketball Hall of Fame.
Anyway, so 1980, we got Jerry West, Oscar Robertson. Okay, yeah, both those.
Yeah.
Jerry Lucas, are you going to put Jerry Lucas in before you're going to put in Sam Jones?
We're talking 1980, by the way, we're talking. And they're still just like, I don't know about this Jones guy.
and Jerry Lucas was like, that was probably his first year he was eligible, too.
Right. Oh,
I know he was a great college player, but.
That's always a part of it.
One of the best college players ever, but I'm just kind of like, I don't know. And then they put in Les Harrison, who was the Royals coach, GM, and owner. He put him in as a contributor. 1981, Walter Kennedy. The 1981 Hall of Fame class
Walter Kennedy. Yeah, the only person who belonged in the Hall of Fame, Walter Kennedy.
Right, the only NBA guy who. Yeah, I'll see if I can pull up that list after we're done with this because I'm very interested in the 1981 class. 1982. We get Hal Greer, Slater Martin, Frank Ramsey, and Willis Reed.
Willis Reed, come on. Willis. He's fine.
Willis Reed won an MVP. So
he can wait a couple years. He's just retired.
I'm going to kind of give you that. Frank Ramsey ahead of – Frank Ramsey was great, and he'd been waiting longer. But, ahead of Sam Jones, Slater Martin. I mean, come on, Hal Greer, basically contemporary, and about as good as Sam Jones. But obviously not as many team accomplishments. So, Will Street's the only one out of those guys who I'm like, I guess you can put him ahead of Sam Jones. But 1983, Bill Bradley, Dave DeBuscher, and Jack Twyman. I mean, what are we doing here? I mean, like,
did Bradley give them like some sort of grant? Or was he? Because he was, I mean, was he in public office at this point yet? Was, so
he was senator, I think it was not long after he was elected senator. So
okay, yeah, they wanted.
So yeah, apparently they want the prestige of that. I don't know,
prestige or some sort of grant or something. Even though I don't think he would have been in their that jurisdiction whatsoever. But yeah, you know, yeah, some sort of
right
wanted to grease the grease the wheel a little bit, I guess, for a future political benefit. So
finally, in 84, they got to put John Havlicek in because, you know, this was his first year eligibility. They're like, oh yeah, well, it's kind of an embarrassment that we put Sam Jones in yet, so let's just go ahead and do that now. So
now, is this something, because I participate in the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame as sure. well, and a couple years ago Dave Meltzer realized he did not put Jimmy Hart in. He always kind of assumed that he put Jimmy Hart in, and someone said, hey, you know, Jimmy Hart said it, and he went, holy shit, Jimmy Hart said it, and he just put him in because he was like, oh crap, I'm not even gonna put it up to vote. Like, what the hell? Why is Jimmy Hart not in the Hall of Fame? So is it possible that they did this? They called Havlicek and they're like, hey, congratulations on being in the Hall of Fame. And he's like, yeah. He's like, why is Sam Jones not? And they're like, oh no, he's in. And they're like, no, he's not. And they're like, oh God, whoops.
Why did we put him in?
We put Bill Bradley in. We didn't put Sam Jones in. I'm sorry. Oh God. Yeah. Invite him. Please, please, please. That's what I'm assuming happened. I don't know anything about it. I'm not going to do any research on it, but I'd imagine the fine folks at the Naismith Hall of Fame decided, oh crap, we thought we put Sam Jones in like 1977. We didn't. Oh crap. All right. Yeah. Have him come.
Yep. So I am looking up. So the 1981 class of the Hall of Fame, in addition to Walter Kennedy, we also have Thomas Barlow, who is a player. I'm looking up Thomas Barlow right now to see if I can get any information about
him. Yeah, he probably scored like 40,000 points in high school in Iowa or some shit like that. So.
Let's see. All right. The Ferenc Hepp as a contributor. Walter Kennedy is mentioned, and then Arad McCutcheon as a coach. Okay, so yeah, we have
big attendance here in 1981, I guess. They really,
yeah. All right, let's see. So Arad McCutcheon, he coached his hometown University of Evansville from 1946 to 1977, guiding the Purple Aces to a 514-314 record.
Okay, so,
I mean, they won five championships. In whatever division they were in. Let's see what, Division II championships. So, okay. Well, you know, interesting. Anyway, let's see. Dr. Ferenc Hepp, he was considered the father of Hungarian basketball, was a member of the FIBR Central Board in the 1950s and 1960s, was the president of the Hungarian Basketball Federation. And Thomas Barlow, he played. He was with the Spas and the original Philadelphia Warriors of the ABL from the. So he played in the 20s and 30s, basically. So anyway, none of those guys I would put ahead of Sam Jones.
No, but, I mean, maybe the Godfather of Hungarian basketball I put in front of Sam Jones because you know it's
maybe
Hungary, the great basketball tradition of Hungary.
They were hungry for somebody to get into the Hall of Fame. So. Thank you, Rich. I appreciate that. Yeah. All right. So anyway, so now we know. So
I like this series. So our next show, tune in for our next show where we bury everybody that's in the Basketball Hall of Fame and why they don't deserve to be in there. So we'll make our own Basketball Hall of Fame where it will basically only be like 45 guys and most of these other dudes are out of here. So sorry, high school basketball coaches of Missouri, you're out. So
you're gone. Forget about it.
All of you are out. Yeah.
Yes. So, Arad McCutcheon, his first name was inherited from a grandfather who was named from the Bible. He often said the name was Hebrew for wild ass.
Okay.
According to Wikipedia. Yeah.
Great.
he also lived in Santa Claus, Indiana for some time.
Oh,
so
I have not been there, but I've heard of Santa Claus, Indiana. So
sure. Well, it is a notable name. Yeah. So
anyway. I think Jay Cutler, I believe, former pro football star Jay Cutler is from Santa Claus, Indiana. Let me confirm that. Yes, he is from Santa Claus, Indiana. So.
All right. Did Jay Cutler make the Hall of Fame before Sam Jones?
You know, not far off. Yeah. I don't know if Jay Cutler has made the football. I don't follow the football Hall of Fame at all.
So. I don't think he's good enough to make that Hall of Fame. But anyway, nevertheless. All right. Well, this has been fun. These shows tend to be enjoyable to look back at players' careers, even though obviously it's a sad time for losing another NBA great. But it's been enjoyable to talk about his legacy. Hopefully, I learned some things here. Hopefully, everyone got a chance to learn a bit here. But But thanks, everyone, for checking us out. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook. Both of them are at Over and Back NBA. You can listen to us on pretty much any platform in which podcasts are played. If you want to leave us a rating and review on any of those platforms, we would greatly appreciate it. So thanks again for listening. We'll be back again soon.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.